Chapter 21 Hammer, Bar, and Grill. Trace hopped in the caddy, and Cassandra handed him her phone as he shut the door. A red dot blinked over a street map, marking Primus's location.
"Hold this so I can see it," she said.
"So Dolorum was on the bus?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"He didn't say."
"Everybody thought he would have hit his sixth ascendancy by now. You've heard of him, but with a different name. Remember when I told you about Talisman, the Ash Angel who raised Telemirin?"
"Yeah. So Dolorum is Talisman?"
"Yes. He changed his name after he accidentally killed her father. Anyway, Arcus Magdalene keeps trying to drag him back into the Ash Angel organization. He won't have any of it, though."
"He said he was part of the Old Masters. Do you know what that is?" Cassandra nodded, keeping an eye on the tracking dot on her phone.
"They don't teach the cherubs about them in training because they don't want any of them running off without seeing the benefits of the AAO first. But before the Ash Angel organization formed, Ash Angels worked on a master and apprentice basis. A single master would have 1 to 3 apprentices, and they were typically itinerant, wandering from place to place, doing good and burning dreads when needed. They were very strict and religious. Ash Angel life revolved around that model for centuries."
"He seems to think the AAO is making things worse," Trace added.
"They're always spouting that crap when they try to recruit Ash Angels.
Well, the Old Masters think we've lost our way and have become too militarized and corporate. We think they're a bit naive. They won't even use guns, and actually run around with swords and axes. There aren't many of them anymore, though."
Having Cassandra's phone in his hand jogged his memory, so he grabbed his phone and speed-dialed her number with his phone to see what picture she had chosen for him. The call rang through, and her screen popped up with a picture of a Labrador retriever.
"I'm a dog," he said, hanging up and returning Cassandra's phone to the map.
"Jury's still out on you, Jawhead. That's one of the stock pictures the AAO puts on all the phones so we can tell people we have pets. If you can't morph any faster, I'll probably put a turtle on there. And if you piss me off, it will have a swastika on its back. Now quit screwing around. Looks like the dot has stopped."
They both fixed their eyes on the map while they waited for a light to change. The dot blinked for a few more seconds and then disappeared, a pop-up message reporting the signal was lost.
"Not good," Trace said.
"No," Cassandra returned. "But I doubt they managed to pull the GPS tracker out in the middle of the street. They've dampened the signal somehow. We're just about there. Keep your eyes peeled for dreads. And worse."
They continued on their westward course toward the place the dot had vanished. The buildings were older here, and not as towering as those in the center of Phoenix. Stores, restaurants, and rented office space dominated the streets. The closer they came to the dot's last position, the more red auras walked the streets in the early afternoon, thickening and grouping together. Cassandra shook her head. As they approached the intersection where the dot had disappeared, the location of Primus was obvious. The light turned red, and Cassandra stopped the car.
"Unbelievable," she said, voice subdued.
A conglomeration of dreads and ghost packers mingled with normals around the Hammer, Bar, and Grill. A glimpse through the window revealed more red auras and possessed inside, and the ground of the entire establishment glowed red from an active desecration pulsing outward from a dread or shed somewhere within. The Hammer, Bar, and Grill was a hornet's nest of dark souls daring the Ash Angels to whack it and reap the consequences. Cassandra dialed Arcus Magdalene.
"Yeah, Maggie. Keep the Michaels away from here. Trace and I have eyes on. But there are at least 20 dreads and possessed around the Hammer, Bar, and Grill. And they've got a desecrator. If you've got any satellite surveillance, get it pointed here now. Whatever Gabriel blanks you've got, get them here to keep watch. They've got dreads patrolling at least a mile out. Primus is here somewhere. But we're going to need a miracle or a war to get to it."
The conversation continued as the light turned green and they slid past the restaurant, Trace trying to get a good look inside the windows. To normalize, the establishment would look no different than any other day at a Phoenix restaurant. But Trace had no doubt it was the most dangerous place for an Ash Angel that anyone had seen. The glowing red auras and clinging evil spirits reminded him of being torched, and he shuddered. Getting Primus was impossible. Cassandra hung up with Magdalene and sat back thoughtfully as she turned right down a side street.
We'll chance one more pass. Any more than that and we'll raise suspicion. The good news from Magdalene is that the building does not connect to any underground parking garages. If Primus went in the front or the back, it will have to leave through the front or the back. The electronics geeks say that if the GPS unit is destroyed or disabled, the database should self-destruct. But since it should have self-destructed before now anyway, we can't count on that.
What are we supposed to do? Trace asked.
We'll loiter nearby until we have enough eyes around to track anything going in or out. Then we'll meet up with the others at St. Mary's. Other than that, I really can't guess.
Cheer up, though. Trace the Cherub isn't on the hard drive, right?
Ramus, Athena, Goldbow, and Corinth were waiting for them when they returned to St. Mary's. They met with a member of the Sanctus Division, a Father Amos, who preached and worked full-time at the historic building. He led them to his office inside the southwestern-style outbuildings of the Basilica, and once the door was shut, pushed his desk away and opened a hatch in the floor. A cozy, miniature command center waited at the bottom. Ramus had conferenced in Arcus Mars and Arcus Magdalene, their faces on two monitors at a computer station. Ramus and the others had pulled up chairs around the desk. Corinth gave up his chair for Cassandra and stood with Trace behind the row of seats.
So what happened to Trevex, Ramus? Cassandra asked as she took her seat.
We had a tour bus come in, half-loaded with possessed. Ed Grain let us know they were coming, and the Michaels mobilized security. They all got off the bus and ran every which way, spreading us out. Another bus full of dreads came after. The Michaels got suckered into chasing down the possessed, while the dreads got Primus and detonated one of the propane tanks with hardly any resistance. It was a colossal failure in security.
My people did their job, Ramus, Mars said. This was unprecedented.
I'm sure the Archive will evaluate the response of your team and pursue corrective action accordingly, Ramus said. The odd thing was that several dreads died to detonate the tank. It was a coordinated suicide mission against an Ash Angel facility, completely unheard of. They had to know it wouldn't even kill us.
Corinth whistled.
Is it all gone?
Ramus nodded. It's gone. We detonated what was left to hide it. Primus should have detonated too, but here we are. Analysis of the attack can wait. We need Primus, and we've got a plan.
What plan? Cassandra asked.
Arcus Magdalene leaned forward, face filling the screen.
If the dreads cracked the encryption, we're dead in the water. The recent compromised missions indicate that the dreads may already be in the system. We need to send in the one person not in the system to reconnoiter the place.
We need Trace.
No, Cassandra said. Just because Jarhead's not in the system doesn't mean we can throw him under the bus. Going in that place is suicide, and it gets us nothing. The boy can hardly zip up his proverbial Ash Angel pants, for heaven's sake. They'll pick him out in a microsecond.
Trace furrowed his brow. That wasn't fair. He'd been in some pretty tough spots already and come out okay.
Listen to reason, Cassie. Ramus argued. Whoever perpetrated this attack had inside help. They knew where the computer core was. They had the keys and codes to access it. They were able to subvert the self-destruct mechanism. If they had help and the skill to do all those things, there's a chance, while not likely, that they've already plowed through the encryption and have a list of every Gabriel within 200 miles of this place, including photos and identity sets. More likely is that whoever is helping them already provided them with that information. Trace is the only one they couldn't know from a computer dump. He's the best shot we have.
But that's not the point, Cassandra argued. There's no reason to go in there. We watch the exits and pounce on anyone coming out. The drive is the size of a briefcase. You can't just wander off with it tucked in your pants.
Look, Cassie, Arcus Magdalene broke in.
The tech department said that if the dreads cracked the outer shell, the drive could easily be smuggled out inside a backpack. Something smaller if they just take the chips. Getting someone in there to watch is our best chance to find out what's going on and where it is. We need eyes in there.
Then send me, she retorted. I can morph into some mangled slob of a woman they've never seen in the ident photos.
No, Cassandra, Ramus interrupted. The dreads and possessed in this town have seen you more than any other Gabriel.
Then don't send anyone, Cassandra yelled. It's pointless to send some rookie who turns into a puddle when he's torched, not to mention how slowly...
Trace grabbed Cassandra's arm, and she quieted, turning toward him with a bitter expression.
I'll do it.
Cassandra pulled her arm from his grasp and threw her hands up in disgust.
I'm not going to sit here and listen to this.
She stormed away and ascended the steep stairway to the hatch leading to Father Ramus's office, closing it with a loud bang. Wistfully, Arcus Magdalene smiled at Trace. Ramus sat and ran his hand through his hair, appearing exhausted.
I'll go talk to her, Goldbow offered, preparing to rise.
The hatch cracked open before he could stand.
And don't send Goldbow up here to talk to me either, Cassandra spat. And don't forget that Trace is a protocol flouter who doesn't obey orders.
The hatch closed again.
Look, Trace, Arcus Magdalene said, face grave. I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you. This is the most dangerous thing I've ever asked an Ash Angel to do in my entire time as Arcus of the Gabriels. They are desecrating the main floor, which means you will feel pain, and your bestowal of strength won't work. They'll be on the lookout for blanks, which means you'll be under intense scrutiny, especially when you first enter. If you do anything that might indicate you are looking for something, or if you use your phone too much, you'll be spotted for sure. We're getting a phone and some basic documentation prepped for you, but with Trevex gone, it might not get here in time. Your goal is to hang back and watch. Look for anyone who might be carrying something in a large case, and see if the dreads are concentrated around any particular spot. If you feel threatened, get out.
Arcus Mars piped in. Don't worry, Trace. By the time you're ready to go in, I'll have Michaels ready to pour in at the slightest hint of trouble. Hell, if you survive, they might even let you graduate. Eh, Ramus?
Enough of that.
Magdalene interrupted before Ramus could let fly a response.
Trace, we'll give you a number to text us anything important. We'll use coded messages, of course, but use the phone sparingly. Now, Corinth, I need you to get Trace prepped. Give him tips.
The hatch cracked open.
I'll do the prepping, thank you very much, Cassandra said acidly as she came down the stairs. I'm his trainer. Now all of you get out. Corinth, I need you to get some dirt and beer and bring it back here. Some cheap cologne, too.
Whatever you say, boss. Corinth saluted.
The teleconference ended, and everyone cleared out. After berating him for nearly 5 minutes for taking the mission, Cassandra got down to business, explaining all the intricacies of manner, posture, and attitude she would use had she been chosen to go. It all came out in a disorganized, anxious tumble that provided no good thread to hold on to. But Trace let her ramble. The more advice she gave, the calmer she became. Corinth returned just as she was running out of things to say, and he handed Trace the bottle of cologne and set the six-pack on a table. In a brown lunch sack, a handful of fresh dirt waited.
You know how many weird looks I got carrying a pack of beer in here? Not to mention digging around in the planters? Hopefully, Father Ramus will be able to explain his attempts at reforming the strange dirt-digging drunk.
Chumpkins, I needed one beer, not an entire pack.
I graduated, Cassie. You call me Corinth now, remember?
Except when you do something stupid, she said. Now let's get to work. He's got to look a bit unkempt. Someone no one wants to talk to, but still nice enough to actually be in public.
I'm on it.
Okay, Jarhead. What kind of a drunk are you?
Cassandra asked as Corinth distressed and odorized his clothing by strategically sprinkling beer on him.
What kind of drunk? He asked.
Yeah, you know. Do you get angry, sullen, dress up in women's clothing and dance on the table?
I'm just quiet, I guess.
Sullen, then. That'll work. Just remember to not make eye contact and to complain a lot.
When you go in there, you act like you want to forget everyone and everything. Now look at me and focus. You've got to morph, and you don't have all day to do it. I need some scruff on those cheeks, and I need it now. Close your eyes.
He obeyed, and she reached out and placed the palms of her hands against his cheeks, startling him.
Now look, Jarhead, I'm not trying to get friendly here. I want you to get my hands off your face, but I want you to think of your facial hair pushing them away like 1,000 tiny columns pushing upward. Got it?
That's weird.
Yeah, but it works. Do it, she ordered.
Trace formed the mental image in his head, envisioning Cassandra's hands as a smothering blanket he had to throw off. He considered facial hair one of his best areas, but surprised himself by actually forming a nice layer of stubble in scant seconds, the hairs sprouting outward as if to escape the confines of her palms.
Good, Jarhead. Now for the eyes. We need bleary and exhausted.
She put her face almost nose to nose with Trace's.
Look at my eyes.
Her bright blue eyes transformed almost instantaneously, dimming, yellowing, and streaking with red veins. The skin around them loosened and darkened.
I'm your mirror, Trace. Make my eyes your eyes. Back off for a minute, Chumpkins. He's got to concentrate.
At first, Trace had a hard time ignoring the intimate distance between them, but she never blinked or wavered. He sobered himself by remembering the scads of dreads surrounding the bar and went to work.
A little more yellow, she coaxed. Okay, good. Now for a little emaciation and discoloration. Generally, we move fat around. Now we need to get rid of it and get skeletal. Did you wrestle with your brother?
Sure. She moved around behind him and encircled his midsection in a Herculean vise. She was strong.
Now remember, Jarhead, when your brother caught you, you'd sucked in and pry at his arms to free yourself. Think of it the same way, except you're trying to thin your body so you can escape the ring. I'm going to squeeze really hard, but I won't keep tightening. Just thin yourself until the pressure is gone.
Again, the tactile feedback solidified what he had to do in his mind, and the transformation came with relative ease compared to the mighty struggles that usually blocked his morphing. When he declared he was done, she lifted up his shirt to ensure his ribs stuck out the proper amount.
Not bad, she complimented him. Now stick out your arm.
He complied, and she put her own next to it, her skin soft against his.
The look and the texture is important, Jarhead. We're shooting for Guy in his mid-40s. Watch my arm, and change it to exactly what you see and feel.
Her skin became desiccated and roughened, tiny freckles and imperfections peppering the surface. While it took him minutes to accomplish what she pulled off in seconds, the process clicked for him in a way it never had. She coached him through the other arm and his face in similar fashion. And then Corinth resumed his ministrations with Cassandra's help, weathering and discoloring his teeth and nails to make sure nothing seemed Ash Angel fresh. When Cassandra produced a small mirror from her purse for him to admire their work, a stranger looked back at him. It took another 2 hours for his wallet to arrive. It took another to change the picture so the Nathan Peterson on the driver's license looked like the man Cassandra had helped Trace morph into. When his new phone arrived, so did the dead weight in his stomach, along with the stark realization that he was about to walk into a building full of people that would tear him apart in the most miserable ways if they found out who he was. Cassandra must have noticed his suddenly sober countenance, and she slapped him on the butt like a coach about to send her worst player into the championship game.
You can do it, Trace. Remember what I told you, she said, eyes pleading. I'll be right here waiting for news, and please forget your good upbringing. Do not be Mr. Nice Guy, and don't get any delusions about saving the world or proving how clever you are or playing some stupid prank. Just do the job and get out. Got it? And breathe. Don't forget to breathe. Not breathing is a dead giveaway.
Got it. After a handshake from Corinth and a wave to a nail-biting Cassandra, he ascended the stairs. Father Amos escorted him back to the door.
God be with you,
was the last encouragement he heard before stepping out of the hallowed confines of the church and out a back way into the street to catch the next bus to enemy territory.